Hey, it's Craig and Steven from the podcast Meet Me at the Table. Both Steven and I started this podcast to meet people where they are.
You're about to listen to this segment called Everyone Has a Story, where we hear from the many people that have been silenced from the church.
This segment is to continue to meet people where they are and give people the opportunity to speak about why they left the church.
We are here to listen and look forward to hearing your story. We'll see you there.
Hello, I'm Craig Seibert.
And I'm Steven Duanis.
And we're the hosts of Meet Me at the Table. It is a podcast focusing mainly on Christianity and how it's lost its personal connection to people. But we're going to leave the table open to discuss other areas as well. We're going to tackle issues like women in leadership roles in the church, acceptance of those in LGBTQ plus community, or racial indifferences. We do set the table for both sides to be heard in a respectful manner.
Yes. So today we're here for another story of Everyone Has a Story. If you listened last week, we had Phil Kinnison on for an episode. And if you're watching, you're going to notice that there's another different face on the screen. Instead of saying Phil, you know, like Phil in, I want Misty to Mist in who this is. Get
wow,
it?
Wow. Okay.
Another dad joke? No?
Oh, no, wow. No.
That was
missed.
We're one.
Get it?
I'll fade in. How's
okay.
that?
Okay, that's better. Okay. That's better. Maybe you should take over. Misty, can you please tell us a little bit about yourself?
Hello. My name is Misty Seibert. I am, Craig Seibert is my better half. I choose those words carefully. There is no doubt in my mind that he is definitely the better half.
So nice of him. That's so nice of
him. I know. We have been married for
16.
So we've been together for a long time.
Yes, we've been together for a long time.
We have a 15-year-old son together.
We do.
I have a 26-year-old daughter from a previous relationship. I am an Enneagram 8, mm-hmm. like Steven.
Yeah.
I'm a Sagittarius. The combination of those things means that I have no filter.
Which is why I'm the better half.
Only one of the reasons, but yes. I'm also very passionate when I speak, very emotional. If I raise my voice, if I cry, you'll know that it comes from a place that means something to me. Mm-hmm. It comes from a place of thought and overthought and a need to change. So just be prepared.
Yeah, I think those Enneagram, I know some people, even since we've recorded this, we've talked about Enneagrams and people say, no one cares. If you take the test and you get to learn about what Enneagrams you are, it really does tell you a lot about yourself and then also your significant other. I mean, Hannah, my wife, is an Enneagram 9, and that tells me a lot about her and that she's the majorly complete opposite of me. And Enneagram 8s, we usually do speak from the heart and with a lot of emotion. And a lot of times people find that as a weakness, but I look at that as a strong point in my personality. And Misty, knowing you, I think it's great that we can both at least speak our mind. A lot of times it brings a lot of emotions and frustration to the Enneagram 9s, but
most definitely.
Yeah, no.
Well, I think awesome. I've only been through colors and whatever the other quadrant one is. But I guess I'll have to take this test to figure out where I am.
You should.
You guys, so.
Most definitely.
I can tell you, but I won't do that to you on air.
Uh-huh. No, most definitely you should take it. So going from there, can you tell us a little bit about your experience in the church, denomination, length, what you did in the church and, you know, et cetera?
Of course. I started in the church just as I was entering school, like elementary school. Mm-hmm. My mom did not want me to attend a public school. So she wanted a private school that had a quote unquote higher education. So she enrolled me in a Southern Baptist school in Central Florida. What came along with enrolling into that school was you were required to be a member of that church. Mm-hmm. And so Wednesday nights, Sunday mornings, Sunday nights, we attended that church. Now, with that being said, I wouldn't tell you that I came from a religious family. Like nothing that we ever did at home reflected what was spoken about in church or even school at that point for me. you know, we didn't pray over our meals or read the Bible or anything like that at home. It was purely coming from a place of wanting a better education for me. And so I attended that school for a few years. Just a couple things. We weren't, you know, like we started each morning saying the Pledge of Allegiance to the American flag, and then the Pledge of Allegiance to the Christian flag, and then the Pledge of Allegiance to the Holy Bible.
There's a Pledge of Allegiance to the Christian flag?
There are.
All three and to the Bible.
I knew that one. I didn't know there was one of the Christian flag. That's interesting. Oh,
yes. There absolutely are.
Yeah.
You know, and we were just taught a lot of the typical Southern Baptist, you know, modesty. Like I wasn't allowed to cut my hair. I wasn't allowed to wear anything but skirts below the knee, that sort of thing, at least for school. I mean, the majority of the education itself was memorization of Bible verses. You know, we sat with both feet on the floor and our hands, you know, folded on our desk. And if we needed to say something, we raised our hand. If we spoke, we stood up before we spoke.
God forbid if you did, though.
It was a lot of control, which you'll see as a theme probably through my story. But yeah, it was a lot of just, you know, I mean, I'll be honest, the language arts, the math education were fantastic. When I transferred out of that school into a public school, I was in the middle of elementary, and I was definitely a grade or two above my peers that attended public school, but we moved. And so I wasn't able to continue the private school. So again, our family really wasn't religious. So when we moved and I came out of the private Christian school, we didn't attend church anymore because we had only done it for one reason in the first place.
Yep.
I'd say, goodness, I didn't have another relationship with church until, I don't know, the end of high school, close to the end of high school.
Before you get off that, can I ask a question?
Of course.
So did you have a spiritual feeling when you were in that school?
No.
Like, did you have any connection?
No.
Okay. Just, that's all. I just wanted to be.
Absolutely not.
Okay.
No, nothing whatsoever. In fact, the one thing that really stands out to me about that whole situation was that if we missed attending a church service, even if it was like a Wednesday night Bible study or something, within a day or two, we would receive a visit, a knock on the door from someone from the church. And the majority of the time, they would come in with the guise of, are you guys doing okay? We missed you Wednesday night. You didn't attend church. But it was typically to collect whatever tithes had been missed from that service. So,
yeah. Very authentic.
Oh, yeah. it's Southern Baptist on point.
Yeah.
So I didn't have any experience with church again until, like I said, the middle of like high school. I didn't miss it because at that point I was free to the world, and it was quite a culture shock shifting from private to public school. But
I'm sure,
you know, it is what it is. But in high school, I did attend like a youth group type thing, very informal. Basically, convinced my mom to drop me off once a week because, you know, there were some cute guys playing guitar and I wanted to make sure that I was a part of all that.
I'm a cute guy playing.
Well,
not back then. But
not back then. Might have been.
Maybe.
So yeah, I mean, that was pretty much the extent of it through high school. The big thing for me at the, around that age for me was, this boy that I was dating in high school, and I use the word dating loosely because, you know, we were like 14, but he dumped me on the way back from a field trip from high school. We went to Epcot and he dumped me because I was physically tempting him to do things that he wasn't allowed to do.
Was the trip a Christian trip?
It was not specifically a Christian trip, but I had met him through the youth group.
Oh, gotcha.
So
you were the devil.
I was a horrible person. I was physically tempting him with my bare shoulders and exposed calves. I don't know. So, but that's my first heartbreak story. It came from Christian indoctrination. So, yeah. So,
the shoulders.
Anyway, After that, I got married very young. I turned 16 in December, got married in January. The person that I married was anti-religion. I ran as far away from the church as I possibly could get. I didn't want any part of it. He was even further than I was. When my grandfather passed away, he wouldn't even go to the funeral because it was held within a church building.
Wow.
So we had my daughter, and I just didn't want any part of any of religion or Christianity because I had had nothing but kind of, I don't know, horrible experiences.
Yep.
So Craig comes along.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, basically.
The story in itself right there.
So for starters, I was still married when Craig came along. And Craig and I started sort of talking. And, you know, I mean, my marriage had basically been over on everything but paper for a year and a half or so at that point. But Craig was there. And
Craig
told
was
me
the
that
new
he
hot was, guitar player.
He was the new hot guitar player. And he did tell me that at some point in the first couple of months that he didn't believe he could be in a relationship with somebody that didn't believe the same things that he
it's
did.
Not what I said.
It is almost exactly what he said.
What I said was, is that if you were closing it off 100%, like I was fine with, and I think this is probably the attitude we should really carry nowadays as Christians is if you don't want to believe, that's fine. If you're blocking out 100% at that point in time, this is what I said to her, is if you're blocking out 100% and saying it's never going to happen, then I really wasn't comfortable with continuing on. I'll take 1%. And, you know, I think Christians nowadays don't go into it with that. They go into it with, you know, we'll love you, but, you know, if you're going to tell me it's 0%, we really don't want to have anything to do with you at all. Mm-hmm. We don't want to see you. What they should be saying is we love you. Yeah. End of sentence.
I think a lot of it also is just like talking. Will you at least talk with me and accept what I think rather than tell me I'm completely wrong. And if you want to say that, that's okay, but it's at least understanding what I have to say and not telling me I'm stupid or that I'm dumb for the way I believe. It's just, can you at least hear me?
That's the biggest thing. And I'm certainly not saying that that's not the way she felt that I was saying it, because it probably did feel that way when I was saying it at that point in time. But I really, I at least wanted to have a hope of something. And if it was 0%, then I really wasn't comfortable moving on at that point in my life. And I was a different person back then. And
are we all?
A completely different person. I think we're going to have a podcast on that about looking back at our Facebook posts, right? Yeah. Right, Stephen?
Good Lord. I'm not looking forward to that one.
So I'll let her continue on.
That's fine. He just, you know, from my point of view, I was told that I needed to, you know, at least share some faith and the same religious values that he did, in order to continue the relationship. And at that point I would have done whatever I needed to continue the relationship, regardless of how I felt in my heart. I was going to go through those emotions for him. So I attended church with him the first time when I showed up. It was in a cafeteria of an elementary school. The preacher was the son of the third grade teacher from the Southern Baptist school that I had attended, which was super creepy and weird.
He was a hot guitar player too.
He was no such thing, I promise.
He was a guitar player.
But during the sermon, not hot. During the sermon, he talked about divorce and how it was a sin. So
you're sitting in there guilty as anything, like, oh my God, I'm not even accepted of me. I'm not even accepted sitting in here.
From the get go. Yeah. 100%. So, I don't remember if we actually went back to that place or not. I don't think we did, but we kind of bounced around at a couple of other places.
And this is in Florida. This is before we moved up to Maryland.
Yeah. So we eventually get married and we move up here. Mm-hmm. When we arrive up here, we found a church basically through the internet.
Yeah.
And went for quite a while, non-denominational. Really great people. Honestly, some of the people we met through that church are still our friends today. And, you know, I have no qualms with them at all, really. They're a seeker's church.
Yeah.
And so a lot of their stuff is very surface level. A lot
beginner,
of their sermons.
Beginner Christian stuff.
And at some point, I just felt like we needed more, but, you know, that's not their responsibility to provide to us. I need to go find it. And so we left that church. We went to the mega church.
Oh, yeah, we did. Next. We did go to the mega church.
Yeah, that was a fun one because we went through the membership class. And
the mega church that me and Hannah went to?
Yeah, it's the same one.
Okay.
Was it really? It
is.
The
one that starts with an R. I guess, yeah, Redeemer.
It does start with an R.
Yeah. We're talking about Redeemer, yeah.
Okay. So we went to said mega church and became members, and at the membership banquet where we became official members, we sat with the head pastor and his wife and a couple other people. It was really, like, we felt pretty special, to be honest with you.
Yeah, this guy's on the radio.
Yeah, exactly. I liked it personally because we could go in the back door and sit down and leave, and I didn't have to talk to anybody or really participate. Mm-hmm. But then, I don't know, six or 9 months after we became members, we got a thing in the mail from that church that said, "Hey, we're so glad that you keep coming to our church. We'd like for you to sign up and become a member and go through our membership class."
Amen.
And at that point, we realized, okay.
And we'd actually stopped going. We had kind of, about a month or so, we had not gone in a row. And then they sent us that email saying, "Hey, you should come to take this class."
Yeah. So at that point, I figure if they can't organize their basic, administrative services, then I'm not 100% confident about their.
Before you keep going, if you don't mind me jumping in here, this is the same church that I've mentioned in previous episodes of where I went to at the time, the campus pastor and said, "Hey, if I left today, would anybody notice?" And the response was, "We don't have the staff to notice." So
yeah.
Same time, same. Yep. Exactly.
Same idea. Same.
That's a problem.
So, we did leave that church. We went to very, very small church. And when I say small, I mean like 15 people and less. Again, met some amazing people. They met in another cafeteria of an elementary school this time. Mm-hmm. And it was okay. No real complaints. The pastor there was actually very encouraging. I had expressed interest at that point in going into some sort of evangelism or pastoral education, and he encouraged me and was very supportive.
That's awesome.
The church itself just kind of disintegrated from the inside out, though, after a little bit. And, we moved on kind of not by choice. But I had made the choice at that point myself to pursue a degree in evangelism at Liberty University online. Had I known now... Or had I known then what I know now about Liberty, I probably would have made some different choices. But at the time, it was a Christian school and offered online classes. And so that's where I went. From there, went to another non-denominational church, which is the one that we all met at. And goodness, we were there 7 or 8 years, I think.
Wasn't that long, was it?
I think it was that long. It was pretty long.
There was 2 years of COVID, which really adds and like it felt like 2 months.
I don't think we played that many. I kind of ring it up as how many Christmas events we either played or went to, or how many. Well,
me and Misty only played for maybe two, and then we were demoted. But
well, I mean, you're the B band, so you really don't get to play very often.
Steven and I were like the D band. You were the B band.
We did go there for quite a while. I mean, we made the same thing. We made a lot of friends and connections that, carry out, obviously.
Here.
that we're here. Yeah. So,
but yeah, I was there for, it was quite a while. I think it was longer than you think.
Probably.
So, but yeah, that's kind of where my journey with church ended. So.
So why did it end? Like, what was the catalyst? Well, let me step back a little bit first. Is, you said there was no connection when you were younger. Did you feel somewhat of a connection when you were in either Journeys, well, that other church we went to, or Redeemer, or any of the ones we went to?
With 100% transparency. Transparency. Yep. Without the
risk. I like transparency, though. That sounds like something there. I would say.
It's been a very long night. I'm sorry. With 100% transparency, without the risk of future divorce. No. The majority of my church experience has been going through the motions.
Yeah.
There was not a lot of buy-in on my end for a lot of the beliefs that are taught. There still isn't.
Which probably leads to the answer to the next question.
There's also, you know, it's hard because there's a connection with the music, because I too am a worship band player. I play bass. There's a connection with the music for me, but I don't think that it's a spiritual connection. And the majority of those churches I mentioned previously, I did participate in the worship band. I think it's more just an enjoyment of playing music out in front of people. That sounds selfish, but it wouldn't have mattered if I was playing worship music or, who was your favorite again, Stephen? Celine Dion?
Yeah, Celine Dion.
Yeah.
I might as well say also Creed.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Shots fired.
Wow. Buddy.
What's funny, though, is you're not kidding about that one, because
yeah. I do like me some Creed. I mean, before you go on that, I don't think it's wrong to say that you felt like it was just to be part of a band or something, because that's what it's come to. I mean, it's all about this, and we've mentioned this before in episodes. It's a huge production. It's not become this where the song was, I'm coming back to the heart of worship. It's not really about that. It's about making sure that you don't mess up, that you follow the lines on the screen. And if you do mess up or get off the track, that people are judging you right up on stage because you were the one that messed up off track. So that's what it's become. It's become a production that you enjoy making sure that you're right. Because when you do something right, you are told backstage, hey, good job, you did good. Or, hey, next time, don't you mess up because you messed up everybody else. So I don't think it's as wrong.
I never got told that.
Sometimes one, so. I did. I'm not that hot guitar player sometimes. So, but, you know, I don't think it's wrong to say that, because I think that's what it's come to. So you kind of get that vibe of, I want perfection. I want to play on something, because when I do good, I'm told sometimes I do good by audience members. So I don't think it's wrong to say that, because again, it's what it's become.
Yeah, I was, I can say with 100% confidence, like, there was not a Sunday that I was there when I was on the worship team to quote unquote worship. And again, I know how that sounds to the majority of congregations out there, but I was there to play an instrument, and I was there to do it right and effectively, which I've recently been realizing was really just emotional manipulation on our part for the congregation or audience. But I was there for a job, and I was there for a job at three of the last four churches we attended. So
yeah, we didn't play.
That's hard. That's hard, because you're not showing up to receive anything.
Yeah.
You know, I said we had been at our last church 7 or 8 years. You know, in that time that we attended that church, the main pastor there probably said 10 words to me. And here I was volunteering two Sundays a month for 8 or 10 hours, and between practice and everything. And that was hard.
Yeah.
Because at that point, they know you're just a body as well. You're a body filling a position that needs to be filled.
And I would say, and if you can tell me if I'm wrong, Misty, like, I think the intent into worship, I think at first is, yes, I'm here to worship. And then, as I kind of just said, and maybe I'm just repeating myself, the intent at first, yes, is to worship, because that's what you're a musician, you called to worship or whatever. But then once you get into the backstage, you realize that the intent and what's actually being done is not what the audience is really hearing or there for. You realize that we're just kind of robots doing what we're told. Maybe that's, and Craig, you can tell me.
And we're doing it willingly.
We're doing it willingly. And instead of, again, I'm repeating that song, but I'm coming back to the heart of worship. That song has been kind of in my mind lately, because like, that was one of those songs growing up I heard a lot. And I was like, you know what? That's true. Like, I should be going back to the heart of worship, which is where it's really all about you, Jesus, not all about making sure that I do everything damn right. And if I do something wrong, that I'm not scolded for doing so up on a church server Sunday, or feeling guilty because I messed up.
Well, and you also know that if you mess up, or you know, aren't giving it
demoted
everything, that you won't get to come back. Yeah. You won't come back for a couple months.
You are demoted. It's not like a singer that sucks that they could just mute. You're a guitar player, then they hear you.
Just put the track in. It's fine.
It's just, that's true.
So the ultimate question was, is there one thing that made you leave? Is it a culmination of things? Is it something that you can pinpoint?
It was a slow burn. Mm-hmm. I mean, COVID in and of itself, when it began, kind of forced you to leave, because you were now not showing up twice a week to worship, even as you were directed. You weren't going to a church service on the weeks that you were off. The first red flag at that point for me was, and I don't mean the church we attended specifically, because they actually handled things relatively well in a couple of these areas, in my opinion, but the COVID response generally from churches was horrific. Mm-hmm. The fact that you have a congregation that has now partially been out of work for 2 or 3 months, that their children who attended school are now at home full time. And instead of reaching out to those families and checking on them and seeing if there's something that the church can help with or provide, what they do? They went out and spent lots of money on high-tech streaming, you know, equipment in order to get their message out. Mm-hmm. It was a disconnect for me. Yeah. And of course, immediately following the start of COVID was Black Lives Matter movement, with George Floyd. And, you know, the response from the church again was not overwhelmingly positive.
Well, some churches was the opposite of positive.
Yeah. So I think that really gave birth to a lot of the Christian nationalism movement that we have now, at least gave it fuel, which again was another disconnect. Within that same year, my son also approached me and said that he was questioning his place on the LGBTQIA+ spectrum. Mm-hmm. And instead of saying, "This is who I think I am, help me find out who I am and move forward," it was, "Am I going to hell? I'm scared. I'd like to go talk to a therapist. I would like for you to purchase a cross and hang it in my room," because it was filled with guilt and fear and shame, all of which had been put into his mind by the church, and of course by us, because we took him there. And as a parent, that feels really shitty. So he wanted to reach out at that point to a couple of the people on staff and talk to them about it. Mm-hmm. And for me to have to discourage him from doing that, because I knew what their response would be, was even more heartbreaking.
Yeah, I bet.
So I had a really hard time reconciling that with what we had been pushing, because again, on the worship team, you're still a face of that church. And I didn't want to be a face of that church because they had made my own child feel like he was less than.
Yeah. Now, can I ask you, and you don't have to go into length here, but how was the response to that?
I never had those conversations, really. I made Craig do that.
I did. I did, and I am actually going to fill in here. I'm in a unique situation here. Normally, I'm the co-host, but I'm actually the husband, too. I had that conversation with the worship team. I sat the worship pastor down, and the worship pastor and his, second in command, what do we call him?
A couple other top guys.
A couple of talented people. Yes, extremely talented people. I sat down and had that conversation with them, and I told them, you know, 100% why, and which is what she just said as well. And it was sympathetic, but absolutely nothing was said to change my mind. Now, there was nothing said to try and turn me to the right way of understanding.
Yeah, I don't think there was ever any intention of harm being done or anything like that either.
But there was just, you know, oh, we're sorry to see you go type of thing. And, you know, we understand and kind of go about your business. So they didn't, you know, and those two people are a little unique. If I had went to the pastor, it probably might've been a little bit different. Or the second pastor, second pastor, I guess. If I'd have went to either one of those, I probably would have had a completely different conversation. But I really didn't have the tie to that church other than being in the worship team. That's what really kind of like what that's she sad, said. Though. Well, sort of.
That's still something huge. Like
it is, but I got something different out of worship than she did. It connected me to feeling close to God. Mm-hmm. Worship always made me feel close to the person or the entity of God, not the church. So it kind of transported me away from what was being held there. So it was a big decision for me to do that, but we were together on that decision. I was not going to put my son in that position anymore. Not only that, obviously we've talked about this before, but my belief has changed on that from when I was in high school and grade school and college, probably all the way up to the last 10 years, maybe even 5 years, that I there's no room for anything that's not love at this point. And I still have a very deep connection to Jesus and God. And it's very important for me to keep that connection, and worship did that for me. Mm-hmm. So when I went to tell someone, I went to tell the people who I connected with most at the church.
Yeah.
And that was the worship pastor and the higher ups and the worship team. So again, they didn't really have a gauged response. They really just basically said, we're sorry to hear that. We understand, you know, go about your life. We don't want to stop being friends. We're cool. And I even still talk to both of them on a regular basis, but there was no pushback. But I do feel 100% confident that if I went to the pastors, it would have been a different conversation at that point.
Yeah. It was never the institution is hurting your child and we're sorry. It was more, we're human, you're human, we understand your decision. So
yeah, there was no admittance to that. So, okay. So
that's good.
I'm behind on okay. So I kind of know the answer to this one. Maybe you should ask this one, Stephen. Maybe I'll let you take 4 and 5 since.
Yeah. Well, before we go to 4, I just want to make sure like that was all that, you know, was the decision, the final decision. Cause I know a lot has happened in the last, you know, even just 2 years, it feels like it's only been 2 months, but a lot has happened with you, as you mentioned, the BLM, with LGBTQ+, all of that. Just want to make sure, because we kind of cut in that really was all that really was what, you know, led to the decision of leaving the church. If there was anything else, if you wanted to say, I know we kind of cut in front of you.
That was definitely the driving force behind my decision, not really to leave at that point, but to not participate, not go back.
Okay.
because again, we were distant because of COVID anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Do you think, so let me ask you there, if COVID was not a thing, do you think that you would still be in church or no?
Not that one.
It was kind of starting to lead towards that, no matter what it was leading towards.
If what had happened, if I was told what was happening mm-hmm. about my son,
yeah,
the end result would have been the same regardless, mm-hmm. not whether COVID or not.
Not only that, but personally, like it would have been probably in more dramatic fashion because there were there was a particular sermon where pastors answered questions from the congregation mm-hmm. That specifically addressed gay marriage, I believe, along with a lot of other hot button political issues at that point. Mm-hmm. And let's just say I'm glad that it was televised because had I personally been present at a sermon like that, I would have lost my mind.
Certain people built up some real good courage to do that while people were not in the stands. All of a sudden,
can I just say, as a side note, total quick tangent, I promise I'll make it short.
No, make it long.
If you are a pastor, you have a responsibility to your flock. If you personally do not believe or are in any way conflicted personally from what you are telling your congregation on the pulpit, that's gross negligence. That is an abuse of power and you should not be where you are.
Thank you.
Period. Thank you. Go ahead.
That was beautifully said. And if you listen to the episode with Pastor Amanda Martinez, the Sin of Deconstructing, she mentioned the same thing, saying about a chaplain doing disservice and said, you should just not be part of this job if you're going to continue doing this kind of type of talk. So completely agree with you, Misty. Now, we've had a lot of discussions of the downfall and also not feeling kind of the connection to the church. But what would it take for you to return to the church, you know, at all? Or if it's a hard pass, but what would it take for you to return at all, at any capacity?
Well, I miss the community. Mm-hmm. I miss that connection with people, being in a place for a shared purpose. So I don't want to say that it is 100% out of the question. Hmm. However, there's a lot of things that would have to fall into place for me to find a church that I would feel at home at.
Well, and our family would feel home at.
Yeah, for sure. For starters, if I walk into a church, let me just tell you, I am so tired of being preached at by an old white man. If I walk into a church or I look at your website and your head pastor is an old white man, that is a hard pass.
And no, it says that they're diverse.
and they have diversity on their description. Yeah.
If your congregation and your staff doesn't reflect the community outside of that church building, you're not doing something right.
I'm clapping right now if you didn't know.
I don't think we need the visual for that one.
Again, for our family, I want not acceptance, but affirmation. I want full affirmation of the LGBTQIA plus community, mm-hmm. period.
Well, I think it goes further than just that community, though. I mean, it's higher level than that. It is love everyone. And just everyone love. Has a right to be there and has a right to go wherever they want to go and do what they want to do. Love is love. It doesn't have to do with sex or race. It's going to be hard to find a church like that. It's going to be hard to find a church that says it doesn't matter who you love, you're still accepted by Jesus and you can still go to where they tell you in the Bible that you're going.
You know, the funny thing is, though, is the old me response to that. And Craig, tell me if I'm wrong, or Misty, tell me if I'm wrong on this. The old me would divert and say, well, what about murderers? Are you saying that murderers can go do whatever they want? And the fact that people, Christians, are identifying the LGBTQ plus and murderers, or BLM and murderers, in the same category, it's not. It's disgusting. It
makes no sense.
It makes no sense, but that's what we're brought up to believe. Like, well, every sin is a sin, but like, show me the proof. Show me the proof. Show me the fruit of where the LGBTQ plus is really sinning or really being hateful in general. It's sickening. Sorry, tangent.
Well, the majority of churches that I've witnessed or been a part of thrive on judgment and control.
Mm-hmm. And it works. It works. People eat that up.
It absolutely does. But I think a lot of the problem is that the people there have a need. And mm-hmm. instead of that, filling that need with love and acceptance, they're filling that need with this existential threat of hell and the hope of heaven.
Fear and hate.
And that doesn't accomplish anything. That just, again, that leaves them feeling shame and guilt for being the person that God made them to be. So I don't know of a church locally that kind of falls in line with what I would want out of a church. It's hard to build a close community with an online church, at least for me personally, because a lot of what I enjoy doing is going out and doing things community service related, physically with other people. So I don't know. I mean, a lot of stars would have to align for me to attend a church again.
And I think that's tough. I mean, we are in the DMV area, so it's a very political driven area, and that, you know, unfortunately, the church is a lot of times driven off of political beliefs. Should not be, but it is. And since we are in the DMV, it is really hard. I mean, as I've mentioned in other episodes, me and my wife are listening to a church in Texas, mainly because we can't find it here. We just can't find the connection that we desire here. And a little nugget that I've talked to Craig about, are the church that we're listening to just asked us, hey, we're going back to in person now, and we want to reach out to you since you're a listener from afar. How can we keep you still in this community with us going back in person? I was like, wait, what? <That's
Yeah. different. laughs> You care about me? What?
You mean your opinion matters?
That's different. I was confused. What do you mean? Like, let's do a Zoom talk and ask how we can keep you entwined into the community once we go back. And I was like, wow, this is what church is supposed to be. But again, it is so tough to find that here in the DMV area because of the political drivenness of this. And that's tough. And I'm sorry. I mean, I will say, Misty, I really enjoyed playing music alongside you, mainly because we share the same frustrations on certain topics on the worship team. So, and we also, being Enneagram 8s, we are very vocal with our expressions and our frustrations. So when something was, when our frustrations would had, I felt like I could just look at you and we would have the same look of frustration. But I always enjoyed that time. But unless you have anything.
I enjoyed playing with you too, Stephen.
You were on Team A. I was never with you. So, unless a guitar player dropped out, I would be like, oh, you want to be joined? Oh, I'm back on. Thanks, Daddy. Unless you have anything further to say, Misty, I have the last question, which is truly, I say this every time, it's my favorite question. Do you have anything further that you'd like to add before I get to it?
No, I have hours of stuff I would like to add, but I will refrain from doing that.
The best thing before we get to this question, and this is where I was supposed to bring the mist in, and I totally botched that in the beginning, is as we had Phil, who's going to fill in randomly to add more perspectives at the table, we're also going to mist in some Misty at the table to add more perspective. That's what I was supposed to say, and I botched it. But it's okay.
I'm not doing this without a fog machine then, Stephen.
Hey, deal. Deal. Hannah, order me a fog machine. Let's do this. I almost said mist machine. Let's just go with that. Again, we're going to have Misty join us on other episodes to add, again, some other perspectives to the table. That's what we are here for, is to add perspectives to the table. We don't want it just to be two white men adding always our own perspective, because we always don't know the answers or how to sometimes respond to certain things. So This is why we've had Misty kind of tell her story before we have her on an episode. So thank you, Misty, for joining. But we're leading to this next question, which is, again, my favorite question. If you could say one thing to the church, what would it be, Misty?
Let me take a deep breath.
Breathe.
If anybody off of the street walks into your building looking for community or connection or spirituality, and they leave feeling like they are not 100% accepted, included, or loved, then you've missed your mark. Period. Pack it up, close the doors. You're not doing the one thing. You had one job. You're not doing the one thing that you're here for.
So you're saying that they're supposed to be for people that just walking off the street, not just for the people that come there every Sunday?
In theory.
I didn't know that.
Imagine that.
Imagine that. Imagine that, church. Again, please one day just listen. Misty, thank you so much for joining. Craig, I know this is a little different. When I had my brother, it was a little different hearing from my brother speak. So I know it's, I'm sure it's even harder or at least different having to be kind of sitting next to someone.
Yeah, I was going to say this. I think it's the sitting next to. I think if she just sat downstairs and had her own camera or something, I probably would have been a little bit better with it.
We'll have to have follow-up conversations like the rest of the night. It's going to be real weird.
No, it's okay.
No, well, I do appreciate you coming on. And I know that it took a lot for you to actually tell your story. And I appreciate that.
It's tough. It's never, even as an Enneagram 8, I'm not trying to speak for you, so please tell me if I'm wrong. But even as an Enneagram 8 where you are constantly thinking about things and constantly wanting to speak your mind, it sometimes when you're the most honest and you know it's going to hurt people, it's sometimes hard to speak that, at least, or even just tell people that you know it's going to hurt their feelings. I'd rather do that off the cuff when I'm mad at you and just blurt it out. But when you know that this is going to hurt someone, even as an Enneagram 8, it's sometimes hard to do that.
Yeah.
So
it absolutely is. And I appreciate you guys for being patient with me as I work up the nerve to tell my story.
No.
Well, thanks for coming on. I appreciate it.
Thank you guys for having me.
Yep.